I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I'm speaking with the author, Russell Shorto. His new book is Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob. We come now to an event that's important to mention, because I want to get back to the family, but I want to frame this. There is a murder, and the murder takes place off camera. We don't see it, but Russell's done the best he can to put together why it happened and what it did to the operation. His name was Pippi DeFalco. This is the year, I believe, is 1960. Is that correct, Russell? February 60.
Yeah.
Why do we believe he was murdered? And they found his body later that spring coming up out of the river. And that rocked everybody and seems to have been the beginning of the end of happy times. Why was he killed? Who killed him?
Well, the murder was never solved. When I first started meeting with people in town and saying, you know, I want to look into my grandfather, I want to understand who he was and what that world was, invariably, each of one of these old people who I sat down with would say, you know the story about Pippi, right? So, I mean, it's still to this day that story echoes in town. That this, he was a bookie, he booked sports, he worked at times for Russ and Joe, but it also at times he would go out on his own, and apparently, and this may have been his undoing, he would also at times work for one of the neighboring operations in Greensburg or McKeesport or New Kensington. And one of the reasons that this becomes such a big local mystery is that he goes missing. The body doesn't turn up for about 6 weeks. And in that interval, you see it in the paper. They're saying, where's Pippi? What happened to Pippi? Who's Pippi? He's this local bookie, and he was working for the boys. And by the way, what are they doing? Why are we allowing this to happen? Why are we allowing this kind of operation to go on in public? This is against the backdrop of the campaign for a president in 1960. And John F. Kennedy ultimately wins, of course, and he brings in his brother, Bobby Kennedy, to be attorney general. And Bobby Kennedy now, you know, a while ago you were asking about Kefauver. Now, by 1960, that push to have the federal government step in and try to root out this organized crime is a mission. It's Bobby Kennedy's mission. And so suddenly, eventually they find the body of Pippi DeFalco. He was stabbed in the chest with something like an ice pick. So clearly murdered. So suddenly you have these events at the national level converging with what's going on in this little town. And you have the Attorney General of the United States communicating with the mayor of this town. And you've got FBI agents in town. So this then applies this pressure, unlike anything that had happened before, on Russ and Joe and their operation. And as you say, it spells the beginning of the end of what they created.
Secrets and deceptions and cheating. Russell mentions cheating and living several lives at once. What you do and you can't talk about, what you talk about, you can't show to people because they might turn on you. All of that puts an enormous amount of tension into all these relationships. And I cannot possibly explicate them. Russell has done a wonderful job over many years to sort this out. However, Russell Shorto, the grandfather, is acting out in ways that are recognizable, except for the fact that he's a member of organized crime. There are several very strong women whom he exploits or who he has incomplete and broken relationships with. There are children born out of wedlock that everybody knows about and nobody talks about until Russell Shorto, the author, comes along and asks stories. There are wonderful women who recount everything long afterwards, including Russell, your grandmother. I loved her and her dog, Bibi, telling you stories and making you little meals with you and Bibi in front of the television. These are intricate family stories, but I want to stay with Russell because he's the fascination. He's the child born in 1914 who shoulders for his mother this family that's threatened in Johnstown. Russell drank. Your father drank. And that is a burden on them and on the whole families. But did your father come to some revelation in the course of these investigations about Russell, about what the alienation and the tension? I want to determine that the author believes that your father learned and passed away with at least some grace about his father's own conduct.
I think that's true. The point you just made, my father agreed to work with me on this, because he wanted to help me. And also because he at one point he said to me, he never broke cover. He's talking about his own father. Right. Like, he never really knew who his father was, which is remarkable. And so he, I think, was also doing this exploration with me to try to understand more. But he had, my father had long since forgiven his father, who, as you say, created all of this turmoil in the family. I think my family always, I grew up with this awareness of my grandfather as a mob figure, and there was always this kind of darkness and whispers around the mention of his name. But I think that was, they would have been okay with him, running a numbers game or something. It was that other stuff. It was the womanizing and the having children, and then not only having children with a woman, but deciding, okay, you can't raise him, so I'll give this child to someone else. And then this drinking, this binge drinking and the blackouts and, just that kind of havoc that it played in a family, which, it happens to happen in this, with this mob context, but that can happen in any family. And those are the sort of things that really, stay with it and carry on into the next generation. And that's what, my father and I, in a sense, were dealing with as we were, moving through this material.
I don't want to do psychology. I want to do opera because I thought of Russell as an opera figure. And I always picture him born 1914, 6 years old, his father's dead. And he takes on a responsibility that no 6-year-old can possibly manage. Nobody. No, a 16-year-old, a 36-year-old cannot manage a family of 9 with no source of income and a woman who's determined to survive in a country where she does not speak English. Did we mention that? Did we emphasize? Anna Maria spoke only a few phrases at the end of her life, and she survived, and Russell had to be a reason for her survival. I don't know about the alcohol. That's probably just doing business, but he had the sickness, and we understand about alcoholism. But the networking he did, he was a corporate man, Russell. That's what I said before that was available to Italian immigrants. We've not emphasized the prejudice towards the Italians. You mentioned it when they first were invited to America in the early part of the 20th century, but that prejudice survived. Well, how long is it? It might still be with us. That there's something different about the Italians, or there's reason to suspect the Italians. And your grandfather had to survive in that. Do I read correctly that it was a context of that city cigar?
You're absolutely right. The prejudice we didn't mention strongly enough up to now. You've got two things. You've got American immigration, come here because we need you to do work that we don't want to do. And then you've got the prejudice, suddenly we don't like these people who are from somewhere else who don't speak the language properly. And all importantly, because America thought of itself very much as white Anglo-Saxon Protestant nation, they were Catholic. And that was a big thing. People were, in the 1920s, when people were fed up with all these, not just Italian, but Irish immigrants and Poles and Hungarians. That's when you have the return of the Ku Klux Klan. And you've got these big parades in Washington and New York, the men in their white robes and the whole deal. And it's against the Catholics. And in this case, in particular, against these Southern Italians. And that helps to give rise to the American mafia, because they were discriminated against. They couldn't pursue, the kinds of jobs, the kinds of careers that might be open to other Americans. And yet they were given that as models. The men of business, the titans of industry, they were their models. So in a way, in a remarkable way, the American mafia is a mirror of American capitalism.
And City Cigar represents the center of a completely transparent organization if you're inside the organization. I think one of the reasons we puzzle about Pepe DeFalco is that he was skimming, wasn't he? And somebody caught him at it, and he paid for it, but we don't know who. Is that how you understand Pippi?
That's one logical, maybe the most logical explanation of why he was killed. It's also possible he was known around town as he'd like to be a ladies' man. He had a wife at home, but he'd like to, you know, impress the ladies. And one way he did it was he always carried a big bankroll because he was, you know, the nature of his business. But people said he would carry like thousands of dollars, which in 1960 was an awful lot of money. So it's possible he was just murdered. And, you know, that then, since he happened to be a figure in that world, helped to touch off all of these, start all the dominoes falling.
The generations are gone, but Russell's here to remember them. The book is Small Time, A Story of My Family and the Mob. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.